Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie, and a very happy, if a bit tired and emotional, Benjamin Kayser. And it's a big one this week as well. Not only will we delve deep into what it took for France to win a first Six Nations title and Grand Slam for 12 long years, we'll also be joined by one of the Grand Slam heroes themselves and a pretty important one at that. We'll get him on shortly and find out all about what it's been like being part of this France side and whether the party's still going on. But you were there as well, Benji, pitch side. How was it?
Boys, it was one of those precious moments where they called it work, but I was just an extra fan. I was the 79th, 177th spectator, probably, you know, just standing there and clapping. I was pitch side to ITV, and so I was sitting actually next to the bench. I was sitting next to Joe Marler, basically, for the first half. He had to grab me at some point. He's like, mate, if you keep on hitting me, I'm going to chin you. Because every time something was happening, he was getting elbowed and pushed and shaken about. And I was on the floor. Every scrum I was hitting, I said, see, I told you, whatever. So it was funny. It's like, mate, I think we're going to have to sort it out if you keep on pushing me. I'm fed up with it.
Why are we on the England bench, Ben? You're a spy.
I'll tell you what. I beat England by actually stealing them some protein bars that they had. Because I was thinking, if some guy's going to need a little bit of boost of energy and he doesn't have his protein bar, that's me, boys. That's me. I was very proud. No, listen, an incredible moment. Incredible moment. I think they put a lot of emphasis on the show. They put a lot of emphasis, the boys, on how much they want to pay back to the clubs and to the main asset of French rugby, which is his clubs, his volunteers and all that. Bernard Laporte, I saw him. He called Didier Lacroix, which is the president of Toulouse, and got him to lift the trophy with them. That's unheard of. Never going to happen again. Then they went to the stands straight away. They celebrated the fans 650 times. I thought, you saw that thing where they're dancing all together and one after the other, they keep on dancing with the trophy. And then they did that Free From Desires, you know, sort of singing.
They still don't know the words to, but it's amazing.
Nah.
It's very, very genuine though. It's really them. Yep. They're a great bunch of boys. They're a great, great bunch of boys who thoroughly deserve their accolade. And I mean, everybody loves them this week. Everybody's going to hate them from next week because they're going to become targets, but not the best game, actually, technically. A lot of mistakes, both sides, but who cares? An incredible, incredible moment. And a great bunch of boys. And I'm sure, and I know actually, because I got some videos and stuff, but I know that they properly enjoyed their Sunday. I know some of them were still enjoying it yesterday morning or the Monday morning, but it's well-deserved because bloody hell, did they work hard and did they do us proud.
And Johnny, you're so often in Paris for these big games, but Dublin at the weekend for you. So were you watching Benji Pitside jealous like everyone else?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I've been really lucky to have been there over the past 24 months and seen the evolution. So yeah, a little bit of jealousy not being over there. I was with ITV over in Dublin for the Scotland-Ireland game. But I think like everybody, and again, I managed to debrief the game a little bit with Sean Edwards on the plane to Perpignan together on Sunday, just how much fun they have together, like how much they love each other, the feel good, the celebrations after every game. It's not just that game, like they work hard, they play hard. It's a real weird cliche, but they absolutely love it. They are at the time of their lives. That's what Sean was saying. They absolutely love each other.
And they're allowed to.
Well, yeah, they're allowed to, as certain other sites that we'll maybe get onto later aren't. But that's it. They're having the time of their lives. You can see the smiles on their faces, the tears of Antoine Dupont at the end of the game. You know, tears of joy. That's how much it means to them. But yeah, a little bit jealous that I didn't get to be there for a few reasons in Paris over the weekend. It would have been very cool to have been part of the weekend in Paris.
We'll get the inside scoop shortly, which is what we all want to hear. But before we get there, Benji, you mentioned it, the atmosphere. You've played a lot of the Stade de France. You've been there a lot in the media. Did it feel different Saturday?
100%. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, it was the best atmosphere I've been part of. Even better than New Zealand. And I thought we peaked against New Zealand in November. It really was that bit extra special. Again, maybe down to organization sort of effects, not just the buzzing of the crowd, but also the effort that they put, the presentation of the team, the celebration with the fireworks at the end. It was a proper show. And everybody was there feeling electric. They played with the lights, you know, before they came. I thought it was outstanding. Really, it was. If anything, if they keep those standards up, whether it's for France or other teams, it just makes me think that the World Cup 2023 is going to be unreal. In terms of energy from the crowd, the first 40 minutes were out of this world. The 40th to 65 were very, very quiet because they were getting very, very heavy. You could feel the tension. You could taste it. It was unreal. You really could tell that everybody was, didn't really know what to say. There was no animosity from the crowds. You know, it's not like they were booing, but you could tell that people could barely sort of breathe. And that 78th minute and 35 seconds, you're like 12 points. Yeah, okay, we can start to loosen up just a tiny bit.
Did that transmit to the players, do you think?
I think 100%. Yeah, well, maybe it's not because the crowd was feeling like that they felt it, but everybody was on the same boat. England were doing well in the second half. They were really pushing holes. We talk about a few missed mistakes in the first half, especially for the French team. Remember Damien Penaud being set up beautifully by Gaël Ficou, but he drops it. He's got a boulevard in front of him in a couple of missed occasions. But Joe Martin's got the same in the second half, and they were really starting to scare us. I think England, you know, conceded a couple of turnovers, made a couple of mistakes, didn't seize many opportunities that would have made the game even tighter and even more stressful. So you could definitely tell that there was a lot of pressure, but they still managed to get through it, which is another learning opportunity, which is another way of saying we can be extraordinary against New Zealand. We can also learn how to win in the shits in Wales. We can learn how to still perform and rock and be all the way up there against Ireland. We can do the hard stuff against Italy and against Scotland when needed. They just learn. And against England, it was a big old side with Ellis Genge, who was the baby rhino throwing himself from the backfield. So I said to you, there was Joe Marley. And then Ellis just came and sat down next to me afterwards. And I asked him, he's like, how much does Eddie Jones ask of you? He's like, mate, he's like, it's hard enough to push against Winnie Antonio. Then I've got to carry the balls from the backfield. But no, it was a proper game. But France got through it in a very smart, mature, experienced way, which I really, really enjoy. And that one for me is the key learning from last night for Saturday night.
And see, on that Ellis Genge point, surely you were sat next to Joe Marler being like, mate, are they asking you to do this as well? Because I was thinking, as soon as he carried the first one, I was like, might be an anomaly. Right now, it's actually a tactic on number two. I'm like, how is he going to scrummage after this?
That's impossible.
How is he going to do this?
He still did well, to be fair.
Really well.
I was blown away by how much work those front rowers going to get through. The best, the most offloads in the whole Six Nations is Cyril Bailly. He's only your lucid prop. Julien Marchand had a monster of a game. Winnie Antonio had a proper game against England for the first 50. Did really well. Jamie George for me is solid. Ellis Genge is out of this world. And I was surprised they picked Will Stewart. Bloody hell, he did well. Mm-hmm. And he moved around and stuff. I mean, the amount of work, and you think about Tyke Furlong and stuff, the amount of work that those front rowers get through now is unreal.
Genge was returning the kicks for England, Johnny, but we spoke about it last week. It was a clear strategy the team England picked. A lot of contestable kicks. They did outkick France in terms of the number of kicks, but France still seemed to win that kicking battle, didn't they?
Yeah, it was the type as well. So Jaminet actually stood up really well. Again, he came under a bit of criticism. He said he was ready for it, practiced all week. Freddie Stewart again came through, competed in there, did really well, pinched one or two. But it's weird. As soon as it became scrappy in any sense, and again, this is going back to conversation with Sean Edwards, he was like, the amount of jacklers we've got on that field, if anything loose hits the deck and people don't time their clears ready, we win the ball back. And that was it. England did really well in the contest, a clear strategy, but the amount of times in wide channels, Ficou, Donty, Villiers from scraps, win the ball back from nothing. So again, it's just so hard. I mean, the tactic is right, but you then have to contest, win the ball and get their numbers to make sure you get the ball back. Otherwise, they can lose a contest and win the ball straight back off you. So look, it was really impressive. It was probably the right strategy by England. It was weird from first phase and from launch. We've seen France actually blitz in defense. This time they didn't. So England almost played into their hands and just sort of, you know, little passes into the midfield, trying to get over the gain line because they were scared to go out wide. And it allowed France, not blitzing off first phase, to refine their shape, come much and blitz again, second, third phase. So again, really smart. Benji talked about the evolution, finding different ways to win. Defensively, again, now they're toying with opposition. We blitz this game, we don't this game, we can manage it. So really hard to play against. And that's been the key element for me of this French side is they've just been so hard to play against every single week for every different kind of opposition, be it New Zealand, Ireland, Wales, Scotland. They've blitzed people off the field. And we talk often about a Brad Affair or a, what do you call a Brad Affair in English? An arm wrestle. And now France in an arm wrestle, they've just got quality, whether it's aerial, whether it's on the deck, whether it's jackling defensively, set piece, the launch. I mean, some of the quality, talk about that phase of play to put Penno through a gap and again, Fiku again through a gap, the balls went down, but the quality they have and able to unlock teams in attack as well was just sensational. So again, maybe not their best performance, but able to win and at a canter.
And the key is as well, Benji, they don't need many chances, do they? The clinical, I think they only had about five visits to England's 22, three tries, they take their chances.
Like Johnny said, defend so well that actually the defense sort of becomes an attack.
Yeah.
No, I just thought
choices paid off. Antoine Dupont has stepped up to the plate of being a charismatic and unreal leader to the point of handling these emotions individually and releasing them exactly at the right time, like Johnny said when he shed that tear. Gabin Villiers is not the most out of this world easy pick originally before the Six Nations because he's a different profile, right? There's Teddy Thomas who's lightning quick. There's whatever other players. Bloody hell, did he give back? He's just unreal. You really know that there's some strong choices that just keep on delivering one after the other. Cameron Rocky at number four did an outstanding Six Nations. The scrum definitely didn't look weaker with him. Dominated opposition and still learned from his mistakes in the line out and delivered him one hell of a performance. And the list goes on. Jonathan Danty at 12. Poof. I mean, he is proper. And that's all these guys. 6-2 on the bench, definitely key again, because that's a risky move, right? But he actually proven to be key. So no, I'm very impressed with the way they did things, very impressed with how they're still getting better. You're not any step closer winning the World Cup after what happened on Saturday. Different worlds, different eras, 18 months down the line, it's going to be completely different. But I think you've got a bit more confidence into your ability of actually rising up to the plate and having a plan A, plan B, plan C, which is definitely going to be key considering opening game against New Zealand. You never know what can happen. You're going to have a bit more tools in there. Without the technical analysis, I was just proud, very, very proud. Proud to be French because we put on a proper show. Proud to know some of these boys because they're a good bunch of boys. Gaël Ficou, Julien Marchand, Damien Penaud, some after the game. I could have been emotional if they let me, but I was just genuinely very happy and very proud for them.
What were they saying? Were they saying, Benji, don't get emotional, you'll get me going?
Mate, one of them called me Mr. Kaiser. I felt like I was 65 years old. they're just good kids, and I call them kids.
You are 65
with a lot of respect and love. But mate, they're just good. They're nice. I think they genuinely love each other. They genuinely love what they represent, and then they're gonna go onwards and upwards.
Who called you Mr. Kaiser?
I can't tell you because I chinned them straight after.
And Johnny, it seems like ancient history now, but we should mention briefly the Jack Noll incident. Oof. What did you make of it?
It's a red card every single day.
Oh, so mate.
Again, kick chase. He's not looking at Jaminet. He's not in control of his body. I mean, the referee actually looks, again, it's almost like he's trying to find an excuse not to send him off. So he says, exactly. Has he changed his line? Has Damien Penaud changed his line? No, he's running a straight line.
First, they were looking at Antoine Dupont's line. And they're like, is there anybody else around?
Exactly.
There?
What about Penno?
Has
he changed his line? Mate. And no, he hasn't changed his line. He's run a straight line from his position on the wing back to support his ball carry. What do you want him to do? Run an L line? Do you want him to run along the touchline and then come from? No, you can't. And they said, has he run across? And it's that point they've used that change in language. yes, he's run across the pitch, but it's a straight line to support his player.
You're allowed to do that too.
Exactly. But the way they've used the language of the TMO is they've used the fact that it was a change in direction, which it wasn't. It was a straight line to chalk it off. So for me, really dangerous. Again, Jaminet does really well not to milk it. Another thing, he bounces straight back up, gets on with the game. Fair play to him, but he lands on the back of his neck. Ultra dangerous.
He can really hurt himself.
Exactly. So it was a red card. I don't know if they'll review it. I don't know if they'll go back and there'll be a citing commissioner. They've ruled on field that play on a penalty against Damian Penault as well, which is super harsh. So yeah, 100% live, and then watching the replays thought it was a red card for Jack Nowell.
The ref is Frank Murphy, who actually used to play nine with me at Leicester Tigers. And then he went into refing. And I saw him after, and the main ref was Jaco Pieper, right?
Pieper, yeah.
And the other one was Mike, the Scottish guy that we had on the pod, Mike?
Mike Adamson. Mike
Adamson. Adamson, that's it. And I was speaking to him after the game and stuff, and I was like, telling Frank Murphy, he's like, tell me if England didn't get a red card after 2 minutes against Ireland, would have you looked at it the same way? Oh, you're looking for something different. It's not true. It's unfair, whatever. I was like, mate, at least you could maybe go from red to yellow, because he doesn't land on his head first. He lands on his back first. Hallelujah. Because like you said, he could have milked it more. He just needs to throw his neck a little bit and he's straight on his head. But he actually tried to protect himself, fair play to him, and landed on his back. So it could have been yellow and the black. He said, no, he changes his lines. I'm like, mate, that is utter bullshit. Completely, completely wrong call. Especially because Jake Nowell doesn't even go for the ball. At least, you know, if you get bounced off and you try to jump, but he doesn't even try to jump at all.
No.
I don't see how they could have been a clearer picture in that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that's enough of having you guys talk about the game. Let's hear it from the horse's mouth. Let's find out how Paris really was on and off the field on Saturday night. And we can have a chat with one of the French heroes. Greg Aldrete joins us. How are you doing?
I'm fine. A bit tired after the game, but recovering well. So it's okay, back in La Rochelle now.
I bet. Benji sounds tired. I can only imagine what you're feeling. Try and sum up the emotions. How does it feel to be a Grand Slam champion?
Well, after the game, I think I didn't realize I was so exhausted about the 8 weeks, all the stress, the pressure, and the game. The final game was tough against England, so I couldn't realize. And I think like more day after day now, I'm starting to realize all the message I've got on my phone. Everybody congratulating and to see all the impact on the fan is we start to realize that we did a grand slam.
Mate, talk us through the celebrations. How big was the party? What did you get up to? And how is everyone now?
I don't know what I can say and what I need to keep telling. But no, we had a fantastic party. After, it's always difficult because the season is not over. But we did a great party, and I think we will party again this summer.
Mate, I want to thank you. I want to thank you because that was one proper Six Nations that put a big smile on everybody's faces. And me and Johnny are just another spectator like everybody else. We're just big fan of this whole team because you guys just seem to love each other so much. But I also want to thank you for something very personal. I played with Damien Penault for 3 years and I've got blisters on my hands by whacking him behind the head because he is one headless chicken, completely crazy guy. And I saw a picture where you chucked him fully dressed with his suits in a bubble bath in Stade de France. And from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for doing this. Because if I'd been in that change, I would have loved to do this, just to shut him up for once. And just to get him to go to do things like he's meant to. So, you know, from an old fella to a little bit younger fella, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I think this rumor might have started with Damien Penno as well, but you had a party on the barge on the Seine. And I think Damien might have said that he lost the trophy in the river. Then Roman Entomac might have embellished and claimed that Baptiste Couillou dived in trying to rescue it. Have you got any info for us? Is the trophy okay?
Yeah, the trophy is okay. That's for sure. But after, I've got no idea about this story. I don't know where I was at the moment. But no, I have any idea of what happened with the trophy. But the trophy is fine now, so it's most important.
The trophy's fine and the party was good. That's all we need to know, guys.
That's all that matters. Do you just, I had a question. Tim was just asking me because I was lucky enough to be there, how good the atmosphere was. Do you actually realize how good the atmosphere was on Saturday, how absolutely electric it was? Like, I was fortunate enough to be there for the France-New Zealand game, and I thought we peaked. I thought that was the poof. Now that was the biggest atmosphere at Stade de France ever. But this one was even better, especially before the game and for the first 40 minutes and definitely after the game. Do you realize how much the stadium was buzzing and was completely, you know, heart melting for you guys? Or were you just so focused on job to do, let's get those 8 minutes, let's party after?
Well, of course, we see the change of the Stade de France, because when I started 3 years ago now, we were playing Wales in Stade de France for my first game on the Friday night. It was, I think, 40,000 people in the stadium. So after having good results and the fan coming back in the stadium as well, because after 1 year of COVID, we were almost used to be in empty stadium, no ambience, but now it's starting back. And as you said, the All Black game was for me the first real big game where the Stade de France was on fire. And after the Stade de France was on fire for all the tournament, now with Ireland as well, even Italy was, stadium was almost full. I think 70,000 people, something like this. We never saw that, and for us it's really important as well during the game. To hear a few times Marseillaise, this was something that was not happening before.
What was the feeling like on Saturday? Obviously, we talked about the fireworks and the display and the power that comes from that crowd, but internally, within the team, was there a sense of nerves? Was it a feeling of maybe getting over the line? What was the feeling going into that last game? Or was it just excitement to get there and potentially be Grand Slam champions?
Yes, lots of excitement. Everybody was looking forward during all the week to be on Saturday night. As every game, in fact, we prepare it during all the week to when we start the game on the Saturday. We know where we are and we know what we're doing. I mean, all the mental preparation we did as well about the stadium. I will be the stadium, so guys from the communication coming to explain us what they're going to do before the game. So in fact, when you arrive on the Saturday, you know exactly what is going to happen. If for the rugby, well, for rugby after on the pitch, you never know what can happen, but at least you prepare it at the maximum. But all what is happening around the rugby, in fact, we know everything. So this is like we're leaving a lot of pressure, in fact. So we know where we are going, where we are putting our foot. And after, we just need to be focused on rugby. And we made the focus on the rugby after during all the week, so to kind of forget what it was that the Grand Slam was after the game.
And Johnny mentioned the feeling in the dressing room. Just take people inside and give us an idea of who are the talkers, who are the characters. If you're talking about the build up to a game, who's doing all the talking, getting you pumped up? Who's in charge of the music? Who's leading all that?
Well, before the game is always Gael speaking. Gael, Antoine. I'm speaking with the forwards normally when we come back earlier. But they were only like calm chatting and everything, because for a game like this, everybody is prepared. You don't have to get the player ready, you know. Just need to be calm, be focused. We said just need to be on defense, really good defense. Don't be break on the middle, be compact. Always show that we are a good team, a team, be connected, this kind of stuff. And after at halftime, everybody was well calm. And I think Francois Cross tried as well just before the break made us it was nice to that he scored just before the halftime. So after the locker room at the halftime was really calm as well, but everybody focused on their job and what they need to do. And after the game, it was of course big party and everybody happy.
And is that, again, from my experiences in France, there's been a lot of emotion and getting pumped up before a game traditionally. Is this maybe an indication of how calm you are because the preparation is so good? You're so well organized, you know your roles, you know how effective you can be, and you work so well together. Is that maybe something that's a little bit different with this French team?
Yes, maybe we're working on that because, like Fabien said, we are Latin, we like to cry before game or stuff like this. But we on that kind of game, I think it's important to work to become and not to to get our emotion coming over the rugby. So that's what we were saying. When we work during all the week, we work as well to prepare our emotion to be ready on the Saturday game. Maybe it's different with this team because there is really, as I say, an organization, and you can see it because when the player change, the team result keeps the same. So in fact, what is really important in the team is all the organization, all the week we do before the game.
So you mentioned Gaël Ficou and Antoine Dupont stuff as for the players, but you also mentioned the organization. For me, there's a guy that is not really spoken about at all in the UK, at least, but I know he is in France. Fabien Galthié is definitely a strategic genius, but he doesn't have the human connections that certain guys have got in this team. And there's one guy definitely does, is William Servat. He was renowned for that as a player, Labuche. That's what he did at Toulouse. And I saw a couple of videos and stuff, and I'm not surprised. I think he's got a very, very tight relationship with all the boys inside the group, and especially with the forwards. Could you just tell us a bit more about, I don't know, a bit like his human side, you know, his sort of his heart connection with the boys, because that's something that really transpires within the team.
He's someone really close from the players. They like, for example, to have a drink with us after the game, because it's important for him to link a bit staff and players as well. And I think what is the most important is that for my experience, after every game, I take half an hour or an hour with him, speaking about the game, looking at the game with a video. And he's telling me, like, this you did it, but this is not acceptable. But this is awesome. This is great. In fact, he tells me the truth. And this is the most important when you're a coach to tell the players the reality and to say when it's bad, to say when it's good, to say everything to him. And that's what he's doing with me. So this is great. After, of course, when he speaks in the locker room, William Servat was an amazing player, a French rugby player. He loved France and French rugby more than I think anybody. So when he speaks in the locker room or at training, you automatically listen to him.
And that relationship with the coach is really interesting because Benji often talks on here about when he sees you guys out in a bar afterwards, maybe, or at the stadium, he can tell how close you guys are as players. There's a brotherhood there. The relationship with the coaches, Johnny's been coached by Fabien. We know he's an intense guy. Just give us an indication of how it works with the coaches. Does Fabien sort of set the structure and then let the other coaches kind of interact with you and do their thing?
Well, when Fabien arrived at the head of the French team, he asked us to train really, really hard on the field. But really, we are always training at live 100% it's really tough. We can do it for 8 weeks for a tournament, but I couldn't do it for more. But after, for outside the rugby, he gives us a lot as well. And so we are really free during a week. In fact, we can bring like some singer or some people to come and exchange with us to spend the evening with them. If we want to go eat in a restaurant during the week, we just say Fabien, as a player, wants to go to the restaurant, you know. So we are free as well on the side. And this is, as when I was speaking change, this is the biggest change. And this links the staff as well because, okay, they asked a lot to us, but they give us a lot as well. Before, if you were having a beer after a game, like everybody was all looking at you like, "Well, this is not pro. This is not good." Or now it's not the same at all.
And like, I managed to catch up with Sean Edwards after the game, and he said a little bit as well. He doesn't have the control of that. He said, "You know, after the Italy game, he's like, you know, it'll be serious. It'll be a 6-day turnaround. They'll probably be in bed by, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. And he said, he went down in the morning, there was boys still up. It was 4:30. He was down for breakfast, but he was like, it doesn't matter. Like, that's what rugby is about. It's the human relationships, the connections, the friendships, the bonds that you build. And if it's really tightly regulated and you can't do anything, you can't perform together. And I think that's what everyone sees. And he sees it firsthand, us maybe a little bit further away, but you have such a good time together off the field. Again, that little bit of leeway that Fabian's given you, but you see what the benefit is, the fun you have on the pitch and the performances that you deliver together have been phenomenal.
We like to, we had a beer together, but of course, and we like to spend time together. You know, when we are in Marcus even, we like to be all together to watch a movie on the night to spend time together. We are happy together, and this is really important. And I was saying in an interview that the last sequence against Wales, when we defend and Peat get the ball, I think you see that the team is linked and there is really a friendship between us, because otherwise we would have lost this game, I think.
I couldn't agree more. I told the boys that, I just said hello to you that night, but we didn't really get to chat. But I bumped into you guys after the France-New Zealand game. And I remember speaking. So I played with Winnie, I played with Gaël, I played with a couple of the Tao and whatever. But I also played with Brice Dulin, who wasn't involved that game. And even Brice was telling me, you cannot imagine how good the vibe is within the camp. And he wasn't even involved in 23. You just missed out on the New Zealand game. You could, he could have normally been quite bitter about it. And even him, who's a very sort of intense and jokey guy and takes things very, he's very, how do you say that? He's got a lot of emotions about him. And he was like, man, you cannot imagine how much these boys love each other. You can't imagine how good the vibe is within the team. And I was like, well, if that's the case, then sky's the limit. Because as long as you guys, is there talent in the team? Of course. Is there going to be ups and downs with the team? Of course. Are you closer of winning the World Cup after Saturday? I'm not sure, but that's irrelevant. Exactly like you said, as long as that unit between and that tightness between you is genuine, is heartfelt, is proper 1,000%, then you'll just deal with what gets thrown at you week in, week out. The game against Wales was average, but you just had to go for the last 3 minutes, dig deep into those connections, deliver a performance, win, and move on. And that's what's going to happen in the next few months. So no, I couldn't agree more with you. I think it's for me, it's the number one asset of the French team of the moment is how much you guys care about each other and care about that jersey. And please hold on tight to that, because that's the main asset that you've got for the future.
And Johnny mentioned his flight back with Sean Edwards. He could understand about half of what Sean was saying, I think. So just give us an indication, because he gets a lot of attention over here, obviously, in the UK, Sean Edwards, and the job he's done. But try and put into words, as someone who's in that camp, the effect that he's had, and about his French as well. It's coming along.
Oh, Sean, I think it's hard to describe him, because I never saw a guy like Sean. Sean is incredible. When he arrived, he really brought us character to the team, you know, to the defense. Like when he do a video, you know, it's really short video, because he didn't like video when he was player. So he said, I will never do a video more than 2 minutes. So when you go to the to present some clips, he's always really short. Like to say, suffocate. We need to suffocate adversaire, and that's it. No more words, and just showing the clips. Doing some tackle exercise. Well, honestly, it's really hard, because we don't see him a lot, but when we see him, we love him.
And is it true part of the reason you love him is because he gives a bottle of Dom Perignon to his defender of the day? Is that right?
Dom Perignon is only for big game. Eh?
It was a big game on Saturday. Did you get it?
No. We after England, we didn't get it. He would give it to us, I think, the next time. But he's not always the guy who made the most tackle or something like this, because for the All Black game, for example, guess who get the bottle of Dom Perignon? Tamian Penaud.
No.
Benji, did he ever win defender of the day at Claremont?
Because he made that read off turnover defense in New Zealand's 22 and came and made that intercept. That was pretty magical.
Mate, he only did that because he doesn't want to tackle. So that's why he went straight for the ball for the intercept. He's really, really quick because he's really, really, really scared. That's the main reason.
Greg, when he gave that award to Damien Penner, did you say, I hit about 50 defensive rucks today and you've given it to Damien?
No. You know, Sean, I will never go against him because he likes to, on the morning, go to do this boxing exercise as well. So.
Yes.
Don't say anything.
Awesome. Mate, looking back at that game, you mentioned it there, the England game. Did it pan out tactically how you thought exactly, or were you surprised at all?
Well, we knew that if we were really connected in the middle of the game, in the middle of the defense, we would not be worried. Well, worried. We never know. But in fact, the key was to keep Marcus Smith calm because we know that he gave a really good step and he could break easily. So we wanted to be compact, not to be too many in the rucks because like one tackler and press one. And to be really good on the escort as well, which was the key of the game, I think. And I think we were quite good on the escort, you know, protecting the kick receiver.
And just talking about the tournament as a whole, obviously a grand slam, huge celebrations, everyone's happy. You can't wipe the smile off Benji's face. You look delighted, thrilled. But there was pressure, wasn't there? Because going into the tournament, everyone was talking you up. There's this favourites tag, which France perhaps haven't had in recent years. Was that a big step to sort of prove that you can handle that favourites tag and also play some of the rugby you've played, which has been a joy to watch?
No, it's a big satisfaction for us to win the tournament that we started as a favourite. But in our head, when we started the tournament, we were not thinking about that because the last two tournaments, like we did wonderful tournament. We did great tournament 2 years ago and last year. And we ended up losing against Wales. Nobody thought Wales would win the last tournament. We know that all the British team, when a Six Nations arrives, they change. It's not the same team. They have more energy. They are better. Everything is huge. The atmosphere is huge in Britain, Great Britain. So we know that we need to be serious game after game. So we had one focus was to arrive at the end of the tournament. And to be, as you say, avoir les cartes à main.
To be in control.
We decided on the last game, and we did that. And after, like everything was, and the Grand Slam was there.
And I met another guy I wanted to ask you about, Thibaut Giroud. So we've had him on the podcast as well. He's had a massive impact on the sort of performance side, on the physical side of your game. Can you tell us a little bit more about Thibaut? Because he's a tremendous guy.
Yeah, we were speaking of William, you know, and Thibaut is really close as well from the players. And I think every single player like Thibaut, and what he's doing on the field is really good for the players. He's really with, he likes to talk to us, to ask us how we feel, if you do that at the training, do you think it's okay for you? Like he exchanged a lot with us, so we play the game. So we tell him with honesty what we think. We're not looking to do the less. We want to do the good amount of training, and after outside the pitch as well, he's always there to have a beer after the game with us. Like there is part of, as well to link a bit the staff and the player. He's a big asset for the staff and the team.
We've spoken about the connection with the coaches there. Benji spent quite a lot of time in recent weeks talking about the connection between the players and the fans and the amateur clubs as well. We see there's a bit of attention on the names of the 2000 clubs on the shirt. Is that something that has almost been a conscious decision from the FFR and you guys as players? And have you sort of felt that in terms of, you obviously came into the side in 2019, you've been part of this journey. Has there been a conscious attempt to sort of re-engage with those clubs and the fans and sort of get that mood building towards the World Cup, obviously, eventually next year?
So, in fact, this on the number, you have all the club name, as you said. It was for one game. It was supposed to be for one game. And we, the players, asked to keep it on the jersey for all the other game because for us it's important. I think in the team, we are a lot of players who came from small clubs. For example, I played Fédéral Huin before going to Top 14, so I know really how important these little clubs are, and it was as well like saying last year they couldn't play with COVID, so don't worry, you with us and you will play. In fact, every game with us, and this was a bit the message we wanted to send to them.
And you mentioned, you know, well, that journey. Just give us an insight into your journey, because it was a rapid rise, wasn't it? You were playing in Federal 1, like you said, and then a couple of years later, you're playing for the France national side.
Everything has been so, so quick for me. But quick, but I had every step, you know. I didn't miss one step because I started Osh, did all my under 17, under 18, to the B team, after to the first team. Then the first team, I went to La Rochelle, starting with the academy. I did 6 months with the academy. After Patrice Collazo made me play my first game. After this season, Patrice left. I started back with the academy after Garba and Greg gave me some minutes. And in January, I was with the French team. So, in fact, everything has been so, so quick for me. But I had all the steps. And I had as well this tournament, the World Cup, where I discovered all the French team I was working, because for me, I would have never thought to be in a French team for one day, you know. And everything has been so quick for me. So, but like I was saying, that there were all the steps. And I know where I'm coming from. I always have my friend on the phone who keep my foot on the ground.
I mean, I think people forget you're only 24. That's the thing. You're a young guy. Like, it's crazy how quickly it's come, but you still hopefully got another 10 years potentially on the international scene, which is incredible. I don't know how you're going to do it the way you put your body about it, so good luck. But tell me a little bit about, again, family. So obviously I know your brother Scott as well, who's based in Scotland. I'm still trying to persuade him to pick up a phone to Gregor Townsend and see if he can qualify and get a game for us. He plays for Stuarts Melville. But a little bit about your family background, where your parents are both from, links, like there's photos of you going around. Antoine in the past has shown me photos of you in a kilt as a young kid. I know you regret not playing for Scotland, but you're doing okay with France. But can you give us a little bit of the background of your family, where everyone was brought up, the time you spent in Scotland as well?
You made the right choice, Greg. No beers after the game.
You've done well. You've done well.
Well, if I go really precise, it's going to take me an hour, but I'm going to do a quick overall because, well, my grandfather was born in Dublin, so on my father's side. Was born in Dublin, went to Scotland when he was two, met my Danish grandmother over there, and he was in the army. So after he went in the Commonwealth a bit. So my father was born in Kenya, started rugby in South Africa at the school, trying to do some bad stuff on the week to be kept in the internat on the weekend to go and do rugby on the beach. And after he went back to Stirling in Scotland, where he keep playing at uni and everything. And one day he met my mother in Rome. My mother, who was Italian grandparents and who was born in the Gers in France. And after, well, they met and my mom said, okay, let's go to Scotland. And my dad said, no way, between Scotland and southwest of France, we're going southwest. So they ended up in the southwest of France. And you know, when you're southwest of France with a father playing rugby, you automatically go to rugby when you start a sport when you're young. So I started rugby over there. I met some incredible guys, friends, like Antoine Dupont, like Anthony Jolon, but like Pierre Bourgarit, like Nicolas Corato, who is in Pau, like Paul Grau, who is in Agen, and like Paul Pimenta playing. I could tell you like numbers and numbers of players who are playing Pro D2 or Top 14, because when the Gers is really a territory of rugby, and I like to say when you start rugby in the Gers, they don't teach you how to do a pass or how to kick in the ball. They teach you how to respect the jersey, how to respect the values of rugby, and this is the most important for me.
And mate, you mentioned a couple of those guys, but that must be incredibly special to have started rugby at Osh with Antoine and Anthony, and now to have done the full journey, be different clubs, but to be with them in the national team, to be winning Grand Slams for France with your childhood teammates. I mean, you could write a book about that. That doesn't happen anywhere. That must be incredible for you guys as friends.
See, I need more weeks to realize what we did, but of course, like, we are living a dream, like, to be with the French team is a dream, and to live the dream with my best friend, like, there is no words to put on that. This is what every rugby players are looking for.
And just a word on Antoine Dupont. Obviously, everyone talks about him. You're up for player of the tournament alongside him, as well as Josh van der Fleer. Have you had a word with him? Because he's won every award going, won this award a couple of years back. Have you said, Antoine, this is mine?
No, I said nothing. I'm not texting him. We're not, no, I'm joking. But just a word on that. I would have loved to see Cyril Bailly or Paul Villemse in the list, because they did an amazing job. They are not so much in the bright, but they are so important for the team. And I would have loved to see a prop, you know, being player of the tournament like Cyril, because it's a position that we don't talk about. And I think they are the two most important players in the team.
Trust me, mate, I speak about it every single week, and I bang on about it at anybody who's happy to listen to me about it. Cyril Bailly is only the player with the most offloads in the whole Six Nations. Cyril Bailly is only, you know, when Fabien Galthié says after the Scotland game, why did he have a good game? Oh, it's fantastic because he scrimmages well, but on top of that, he's got a good connection with Antoine Dupont. Since when is it important for your Lucelle prop to have a good connection with your number nine? You know, that's how influential he is. It's because 50% of the slow ball goes through him. No, no, mate, trust me. If there's one guy who bangs on about them, it's me and it's Johnny and it's Tim. We love those boys, but it's more the, I'm always super impressed with the guys who do the hard graft, but who are the sort of the engine of a team. And the guys that you mentioned definitely got that about them. I think it's down to you boys to keep on promoting them. As long as you guys know, who cares about what the press says?
No, exactly.
Stick to what you guys love.
And that's leadership there. I asked you about the player of the tournament award and you nominate two other players. So there you go. That's leadership for you. But give us a word on Antoine Dupont's leadership, because obviously he's stepped up to the captaincy role. How does he lead? Does he lead by example? Does he do a lot of talking? What kind of character is he within the group? And we spent a bit of time talking about it. So tell us, you gave him some stick for that yellow dressing gown in GQ.
Well, Antoine is a really calm guy, you know, and he's this kind of leader who, when he talk, all the locker, like, it's silence in the locker, everybody listen to him. And when he quite knows rugby as well, quite well. So when he talk about rugby, yeah, everybody listen. But after, he's a captain who listen a lot to the group, you know, to what the player says. And he will not hesitate like 1 second to go and see the staff and say, well, the group don't want that, we want that, I want that. And this is important as well for a leader to assume his role. And he did it really well during the tournament. Every time, like, you say, this is too much for him. I'm sure it's too much for him. And every time, like, he looks so easy, so calm, and so, like, it's nothing.
You say that, but then when Charles Olivon unfortunately got injured, and Anthony Jolon did a great job in Australia, when obviously we were speaking about the captaincy, I was one of the guys who was saying, mate, he's got enough light on him. It doesn't change anything. The fact that he's captain doesn't change anything to his leadership, I'm sure. He's number nine, so he's really influential. And number nine is always there to tell you what to do and how to do things. So I'm not sure it's changed anything. And I was thinking, it's about time, you know, leave him off a little bit. Let him breathe. Did you share that idea, or were you thinking, man, he can take on anything, so he might as well be captain?
No, he can take everything. I know him like since for ages now, and I know that every time, like, he doesn't have pressure, or at least he doesn't show us the pressure. And this is the most important, because you can take the pressure, but you need to feel happy with it, or I don't know, for the group, for the other guys counting on you, you need to feel good. And he's always feeling good, he's always happy. Well, yeah, he likes to always rally,
moan.
When he's moaning, he's okay.
Again, I played with him at Cast, and I was like, he's always been unflappable and effortless. So I thought, give him the captaincy, like, it won't come down to him at all. But you avoided Tim's question. Please tell me that the effort to get that yellow dressing gown, he got some stick from you, his childhood mates, and he got some stick as well from his teammates.
No, of course we told him, like, we need to tell him when you use some great photo. But this is what I like with this kind of JQ magazine. He did that. Finally, we have a French rugby man who is a star, amazing. You know, who is a star. And if you ask now in the street to a man who don't watch rugby, you say Antoine Dupont, he is going to know the guy. And I think French rugby missed this kind of rugby player for a long time. You know, you had the Chabal, you had the guys like this, but for ages we didn't have the superstar like him. You know, the one who all the French people know, and we finally have it. So, of course, you need to be careful to the photo he's doing, but it's great to see him like doing this kind of magazine and being able to be the star he is.
Quite right.
Did you have a word with Antoine afterwards and say, I'm winning player of the tournament? When I do, give me GQ's number. I'll wear a pink dressing gown, whatever you want.
I say, I'm not, I don't like the photo. And I think I would, pink is too bright for me.
And on a serious note, do personal accolades mean anything to you? It sounds like they don't really. It sounds like it's all about the team and the environment and the culture. And whether you win this, Antoine wins it, Josh van der Fleer wins it, you don't really care.
Honestly, I don't care. I wanted a trophy, a collective trophy. Of course, I'll be happy if I win this award, because it's always grateful for fame. It's always nice to get a award like this, but I'm not looking for individual trophy, and I want plenty of trophy, but collective trophy. And I had my first trophy in my career, so I'm so happy with that. I don't care about the rest. Yeah,
that's awesome, mate. Honestly, so cool. It's so cool to see you doing so well. And I'm sure as well, too, again, it was so close last year as well with La Rochelle. You've got some important games coming up to get back up the table. So I'm sure there's a possibility of extra silverware in both competitions there as well. But thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us, mate. It's been awesome.
Thank you.
Cheers, Greg. Congratulations.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci.
À très vite.
Allez. Ciao.
Great to hear straight from the horse's mouth. And also fascinated, listen to that list of countries from his family.
Amazing.
Sounds like he could have played for any of the Six Nations countries apart from England.
Or even Kenya or South Africa or whatever.
Yeah.
No, man, he's super down to earth. Super chilled. I think he's a straight reflection of what he does on the pitch, when he's just a force of nature, but also quite a very genuinely giving and hardworking animal. And you can, that just sort of sweats out of him. So no, mate, we're lucky. We're lucky to have found such a number eight to pick up from the legacy of Louis Picamol and all those guys, but just take it to another dimension. I don't know if he's going to win Player of Six Nations, but bloody hell, he's not going to be really far. Whoever gets it, you know, fair play.
I mean, that's the thing, we mentioned, he's 24.
Nah, it's crazy.
It is absolutely freakish what he's churning out. The amount of time he's had in pro rugby, what he's bringing to the party naturally is unbelievable. Like, there's not many people that have done that over 10 years. The quality that he's churning, he's probably the form eight on the planet at the minute. Age 24. So, mate, he's a lovely boy. His family are awesome as well. Like you mentioned, he could have played for any country and he would have been sensational for every single one. But just so good to hear from him. Hear how much fun they're having. I think that's the bit that I'm getting, is how much fun they have off the field, the time they're having together. And he said it like he's living a dream. So good to have him on, and an absolute legend.
Right. It might seem like an obvious one from the outside, but it's about time we did our meter moment of the week. So, Benji, what is it?
You could have picked anything that happened in France, England. It could have been any performance, but I think you know where I'm going. Ange Capuazzo, you know, going through six or seven Welsh defenders, 78th minute and 50 seconds, feeding off inside Padovani, who actually, if you look at it, got pushed by a Welsh guy into support where he should have been. Thank you very much. Pick that one up for one hell of a victory. I mean, I think, listen, Italy have been the talk of the Six Nations for the last few months. They haven't won a game since 2015. It's a shambles. Nothing's going right. Under-20s win three consecutive games in Six Nations, which is unheard of, with, you know, generations of guys who are absolutely out there. And against Wales, or against Scotland, they played well, but they got just outperformed by a team that just was a little bit too much for them. And against Wales, they won the game by playing. They defended like animals. They were absolutely, but they played. They chucked the ball around. They put some tempo. Garbisi was doing really well. Padovani is a threat. Brex and Marin, I think, in the centers are actually really good players. And they played. I can't remember what the name of their number six, Petticelli, I think it was something like that. Or Petticelli.
Pettinelli.
Pettinelli. And they did just super relaxed. Fischetti, the loose head prop. He was running around like Hamish Watson. Like, that really is how good he is. So no, they won by playing. They won with heart. They won with talent. And that last counterattack is just breathtakingly incredible to finish off on a high. And then again, Garbisi kicking that transformation and falling over. Genuine happiness and proud. I don't think they're out of trouble yet. They still have a lot of improvement to be made, but they play with their souls in their boots, and they did really, really well. So Italy beating Wales in Principality Stadium at the last minute with Ange Capuozzo's counterattack that was just lightning, incredibly good. Fair play to the Squadra Azzurra.
I'll add to that. A bit that I thought was an even nicer touch was Josh Adams giving his man of the match medal. So the moment, I absolutely agree, but the fact he was able to recognise that moment individually for his opposite man or for the fullback, and for Italian rugby as a whole, like you mentioned, where they're going with the 20s, beating England, beating Scotland. I mean, some of the performances have been first draw. Absolutely, Italy beating Wales for the first time, and it means that I'm no longer part of the last side to lose to Italy. So I'm absolutely delighted. So well done, Italy. And long may it continue. It's great for the tournament.
There we go. That was Benji and Johnny's Meter moment of the week. And Meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 11 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can get 10% off any full-price item with the code FrenchPod10 at checkout as well. Briefly, Johnny, you were in Dublin. We should have a brief word on that game.
Do we have to?
Scotland. Well, actually, forget the game. Ireland with a better side. But what's going on with Scotland?
Oh, look, Ireland as well is the first time they had a chance to win silverware in front of their own fans in something like 10 years. They've won and picked up trophies in different parts of the world, in different stadiums. So it was important for them. But Scotland on the field were very, very poor. And obviously what's come out from what happened the weekend before was also poor. But I think to compare and contrast it to the French side, the French side are allowed to do what they want. They're grown-ups. And there's obviously a sort of, it just doesn't look good. It's childish back and forth and control and pushing back and people having to release statements to explain what's happened. And it just looks bad. It just looks bad for Scottish rugby. And so it's not enjoyable and it leaves a bad taste in the mouth. So look, the performance was bad. Whatever's gone on off the pitch is bad as well. And they need to sort it out. I don't know how, I don't know when, but something needs to change. And I don't mean Gregor, because he's still the best coach that we've had in the modern era. He's got the best win percentage. But in terms of the environment and how they get on and how they deal with each other, they could learn a few lessons from the French.
Speaking of win percentages, that is the Six Nations done and dusted. So let's quickly find out your win percentages in terms of the match pint predictor, the Guinness match pint predictor. Benji, I reckon you were just trying to redress the balance a little bit. You know, France doing so well, you thought, I can't be doing well in the match point predictor league as well, but I'm just below Jim Hamilton.
Mate, this it's as fair as Jake Noel not getting a card for that high challenge. It was a clear mistake. It was a clear mistake when I put Italy beating England by 35 points in round two, I think it was. My big fat fingers cost me a couple of, I did still made some mistakes, but my big fat fingers cost me that. And I'll take it on the chin.
And Johnny fourth in the Guinness Legends League, respectable. Scotland.
The fourth, I think every finish fourth pretty much every year. So I'll take it. I know my place and fourth sounds about right.
There you go. That is the Guinness Match Pint Predictor and the Six Nations done and dusted for this year. And don't forget, you can still claim your pints of Guinness this week too. And just a quick one before we go as well, Johnny. I know anyone watching the Six Nations coverage on ITV at the weekend may have seen the news about Federico Martin Aramburu.
Yeah.
And I know you both knew him. I know, Johnny, you were commentating on the game, but only heard the news the morning of the game. It was obviously a difficult time. A real character and someone who you knew very well, and such sad news.
Just a wonderful human being, and truly horrific circumstances and what happened. You could never excuse. But just a quick word on Fede. Like, Fede and I played together 2 years at Glasgow Warriors. Didn't speak a word of English, so we'd sit on the bus together, and that's how I try and practice my French. We kind of planted this seed in my mind to try and get to France. And he was a big part of inspiring me to try and get over here. He was the first person that I drove to see when I arrived in Montpellier. I drove 6.5 hours over to Biarritz to stay with him, spend time with him and his wife, Maria, and their children. And genuinely, one of the nicest people that I've come across in rugby. And I know a lot of lip service is paid to people when we're paying our respects, but Fede genuinely could not have been a better bloke, a better teammate, a better man, a better husband and father, kind, generous, warm, upbeat, everything that you'd want in a friend and everything you'd want in a teammate. So I was incredibly proud to have played with him, but even more so to have had him as a friend and known him. And so I think from all of his teams, like his team in Buenos Aires, Yurits, Perpignan, Dax, Glasgow Warriors and the Pumas, we've all been extremely lucky to have been part of his journey. And now just all of our love goes to Maria and their three children in Biarritz during an incredibly difficult time, but a wonderful man taken far too soon.
And a hugely difficult day for Johnny, obviously, on Saturday. You knew him as well, Benji. Just tragic. What more can you say?
Yeah, it's one of those tragic, horrendous moments that life just throws at you, that you want to hide away from the reality of how, you know, sudden death can cause so much pain, especially with, you know, basically it was after a long line out in Paris, in a place that we've all been to for the rugby lovers in France so many times. Dimitri Yashvili, who commentates for the French team, knew him really well from Biarritz and was receiving videos and pictures of him during the night, of them having fun. Can't wait to see you tomorrow. And the next morning you wake up and there's been this tragic incident. The only thing you can say is life is short. Cherish the people that you love and that you want near you. That he will not be forgotten, because like Johnny said, when you're that kind and genuine and when you're so positive and upbeat, you feed off people. And I think he gave a lot of light and a lot of hope to a lot of people and a lot of smiles. And he will not be forgotten. And we can only want him to rest in peace and that he will stay with us. But it's one of those horrendously tragic moments where life can be unfair, but all we can do is keep it in our hearts and live life for him, through him, and until we go too.
Well said, both of you. And Johnny, he'd have loved to see him France win the Grand Slam, wouldn't he?
That's it. A French citizen and a massive part of French rugby teams. He's won the top 14 twice, close mates with everyone at Biarritz. That's his social circle today. Those are all of his closest friends. So they, like everyone, will be hurting massively. And that was it. That's what he was there for. He was there to watch rugby with friends, have a beer, doing something that we all love. And that was his life. So incredibly sad.
Thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Benji. A big thanks to all you guys for listening. A massive thanks and congratulations to Greg Aldrit for joining us today and winning France's 10th Six Nations Grand Slam. Make sure you hit subscribe. Leave us a nice review if you can as well. Check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube. And we will be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers, boys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.